So when we came to play Australia, I thought we had nothing to lose. And, yeah, there was a couple of guys we picked out to sort of make sure they didn't function as well as they wanted to, and you'd know one of them.
Charlesworth.
and when he gets upset, that's the end of it.
Oh, really?
and Trevor Smith, who likes to have a word or two.
Yeah.
So, but we just, it wasn't a great match because it was tight and everything like that. We played badly in the first half. We missed a stroke. Ram Patel put it over the top. In the next half, we probably had four really good opportunities to score, like two in front of the goal, and we didn't score. And that was because of the grain, by the way. It just bounced the last minute. Australia maybe should have got two. And then our goalkeeper got his knee broken, with 10 minutes to go, with Ian Cook hit this bloody boomer and hit him in the, was just above the knee, it cracked his knee. And those days you weren't allowed to raise it that high, and they thought, you know, that was a goal and all this, and the poor bugger was lying there. And he carried on with this incredible. I mean, he smashed his knee. Like, he never went back on the field as a goalkeeper again, but he didn't know he'd broken it.
Wow.
So, yeah, that whole tension, what I'm giving you an idea here is the tension that builds up. You know, you've done all the training, you're all prepared, but it's the mental tension, you know, like playing in those days, like I was a left half. We had these systems, you know, up, down, up, back, up, and around, into the middle, out to the back again, alongside the goalkeeper, you know, and then you're also bringing into attack. So it's not that much different to today, it's just a different way of doing it, but the tension was high because in those days they had really fast right wings, and Greg Browning was the right wing, and he's pretty quick. And Charlie was very good at setting him up. Like he'd draw you in and try and suck you in and then throw it and that sort of stuff. So we had to really, so there was a lot of pressure, and particularly a one up with, like, I think we got the goal 20 minutes before the end, and then you're defending and trying to do all these things. And you finally get there and you sort of think, shit, you know, we won't have got better.
You talk about the tension there within the group. What about what were the crowds like? What was the stadium like there? Was there any sort of exterior tension coming on to you as well?
Oh, well, actually, we were highly supported because you can imagine any Pakistani supporter was on our side after Australia beat them. So many Indians, wherever you go, there's always Indians. It's amazing. It doesn't matter whether it's Perth or anywhere in the world. When we played in Toronto, 4,000 Indians turned up. You know, like, anyway, so there's a lot of Indians there. And of course, India and Australia had beaten them and they didn't make the semi-final. So all the Indians were on our side. So we had a lot of people, a lot of support. And they're pretty vocal, but it was a good crowd, and they are a knowledgeable crowd.
Yeah.
Apart from the ones that fortunately didn't turn up, the Americans, you probably know, don't know a lot about this sport. They just turn up and, you know, think, oh, well, this is a game and let's get into it. But they don't really understand. And they had 5,000 people from California had to cancel the last minute. They were coming to the hockey final on buses.
And they realised
wasn't the right hockey. Yeah, so there was a bit of a hole in the stand where they booked.
I hope they didn't get a refund. I hope they didn't get a refund.
No.
Yeah. FIH, you know, are you listening?
They are. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was good. The crowd were good. In those days the team stayed behind. We had all our team people we didn't have a huge team, New Zealand, a lot of Aussies there. In actual fact, it was tough for Australia because they hadn't won a gold medal in any sport at those games. And, of course, we'll beat the Kiwis. No worries. Hey, this is our chance. Here we go.
I personally blame you guys for the Australian Institute of Sport, the New Zealand hockey team.
Yeah. Well, that's true. The fact that Australia didn't win a gold medal, that was the reason why they got the Institute of Sport, and because the hockey was part of it.
Well, we were almost with the torchbearers for that failure. So, inverted commas, failure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then, of course, I came to Perth and it was quite interesting seeing Charlie's face, because he wanted me to go and play for Cricketers. And I ended up playing for Freo.
Freo, what the bloody hell are you doing there?
Well, of course, Cricketers were the powerhouse club of that era. They are no more. They're amalgamated. Of course, Fremantle Hockey Club
still exists.
Still exists, not amalgamated. But that's another point. Don't want to harp on about that too much. But so, okay, tell us about the move to Western Australia, and what was the reason, and was hockey the reason?
Pretty much, yeah. I think I'd went to the Champions Trophy in Lahore. There's another disaster where we all had dysentery. And, New Zealand hockey said go and climatise and have a bit of a tour of Pakistan. And we touched the water in Peshawar, and that was the end of me. But I got talking to a few of the Aussie guys, and I'd been looking at coming across to Perth, and they were saying, "We'll come play for our club, blah blah blah." But it was because a lot of the guys were from Perth. There was the first turf was there, the grounds were really good, the weather, and I was lucky enough to get a transfer with the company I was working with, even though it was a disaster when I got there. It meant that me and my family could get there, and that was it, and it was just fantastic. I mean you don't appreciate it till you come from different environment like we had, and I just didn't want to continue on. One of the other reasons, I suppose, was a major reason was this is the officialdom again. We were the gold medalists, and the 78 World Cup was in Buenos Aires, and New Zealand Hockey said, "Well, we don't have any money in the kitty, so probably best we don't go."
What?
So I said, "You're joking."
Yeah.
And so they had the world champions not going to the World Cup. Yeah. So we didn't go to Argentina, and so a couple of us went to the press, and that was sort of the end of me, even though I was still keen to play. But I just thought, we'd fought really hard at the last World Cup to qualify, because you never know what's going to happen in the Olympics. So in Kuala Lumpur, it was bloody hot. And we played another playoff, ironically, against Spain to get seventh. So we qualified for the next World Cup. And no, we didn't go. So I was really pissed off. And so that was another good reason to go to Perth. But it was just... Just wanted to, I suppose, play a few years in a great environment, and it proved to be the case.
You probably arrived at Perth at the start of what was really a halcyon time for hockey here. I mean, the quality of the players that were on the pitch weekly was absolutely amazing.
Well, we talked about them 2 weeks ago, Alan, in the show. You look at some of the higher echelons of the coaching community globally that have, from Australia are from that era here in Perth.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it was bloody... I mean, the club hockey was... It was, people wanted to be there and watch it and be part of it and play in it. And again, most of the games were actually on grass. That's the thing, we had to play on those surfaces. Week to week you were changing, but the crowds around the ground, like when we played Cricketers down at Mel Vista there, a great ground and people right on there go to subs. My God.
Oh, they're still confused. Like that, mate.
Yeah. I mean, And then you'd have Gordon Gettley as an umpire getting involved in everything as well. And it was, I mean, there's a lot of characters in it.
He was probably the Murray Grimes, he was probably the Murray Grimes of his day.
Well, I don't know. Too much with Murray, but, he just had, he was like the 23rd player type thing. he had to be involved, otherwise, if you weren't hearing him from him, you know, he'd just blow the whistle to be involved. But, yeah, we had some great, and then we, of course, we played at the Wacker.
Yes.
And well, great, great grounds, but I mean, I remember old Benno, who was our right wing from Frio, was that quick. He'd be running down the right wing, and he couldn't see the back line, so he'd just keep going, and he'd centre the ball about 10 metres past the net. But I remember one day, old Benno, he was that quick. By the time, I don't think it might have been back, he was going to take a 16-yard, like Benno had gone past the back line about 20 metres, but he just, instead of stopping, he just went in a circle, semicircle, and just kept running round. And by the time Bag had gone to hit the ball, he just hit it like it was going to someone. Benno actually sprinted round and intercepted it. He got the ball again, but he wasn't that great when he got the ball. So you never knew where it was going to go. But here we go. That was part of the old Frio team. We had quite a bit mixed bunch.
It's all about positioning.
Positioning, all right. But yeah, it was. And you know, the players, I mean, we recruited, Belly recruited John Bestel from Quinion's, I think.
Yeah.
In those days. And, you know, a lot of people didn't change clubs, but, you know, we managed to get him and he, cause he wanted to go further. And, I remember we played cricketers and Charlie was left inner and John was right fullback. And I think we lost 7-1 and John was about 17, 18. But you can imagine that happening a few years later. No one would go past him. So that was a skill, you know, that the players and the internationals and the number of guys that could have played for any country playing club hockey.
What's interesting, Alan, is you spoke about that, the primary school and that love for hockey, and that's the sport that's played there, and you talk about coming to Perth, and I found it, moving to Perth, I was just kind of cruising through to have a look at the place and realised that my passion for hockey was met by the community here. It's something which is real and alive. And we've got these pockets around and about the world that really do have. There's a love of the game. How do we spread that to everywhere else in the bloody world?
Well, I think you do it through grassroots. I think there's a move away. What I've noticed. You know, because I'm still involved with hockey in a different way. I've noticed that there's too much of a shift to the technical side now, because obviously because we've got technology and everything. They're getting away from the real, I suppose, the real reason why you play. And if you get that developed, now, there's a guy that I... became friends with. He was actually the coach of Spain, Horst Bein. He's dead, died a couple of years ago. And he was a German guy who realised that he said with hockey, he said with the kids, he says no use playing 11 a side, and he said also they just follow the ball. He said you're going to lose too many players doing that. So he said he put two goals at each end on a smaller pitch. And he created more awareness of kids. So rather than having, you know, all these lines and skills and that sort of thing, he said, they'll learn all that. And it is true. So it needs to be fun.
Yeah.
And so I think what's happened is that we had fun at school and we just developed all our skills ourselves. And then Cyril sort of bashed us into shape a bit. And then, you know, obviously through our, but we learn how to play, but we also learn how to share and also have a good time. And I think it's also, you know, it's like times have changed, but there's a lot of other distractions. And we're in this world, instant world, where everyone wants to think instantly. I mean, I spoke to Raymond Anderson, who's at the Institute of Sport in WA.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's a kayaker and he went to the Olympics. And he said, we've got all these people who are at the Institute, but he said, they want to win medals, they don't want to put the work in. But it's gotta be fun. It's no use having, I reckon they're pushing the kids too early for a start. And also, I think there's too much emphasis on, you know, becoming a coach or a special umpire with all these bloody certificates. Horst was saying, just get the, you know, you won't get the ugly parent syndrome on the sideline if you get them involved. And so by having these smaller games, I know they have mini hockey, but it's still not quite the same. And so what happens is that by getting you could have anyone as a coach because the kids will teach everyone. They can run the game like we did. You didn't need a coach, just need someone to look after you and encourage you. But
somebody with a bit of mouth at the back.
Well, for sure. But, you know, if you get more people involved and then just keep it simple and then just say, okay, well, I mean, when I went to Singapore a bit and Malaysia, they have the music. I mean, they don't have all the numbers and that, but they have a lot of fun. The Indian clubs are incredible.
Yeah,
they have all the beers and the music and it just needs to be where people want to be.
Yeah.
And I think that doesn't matter what sport it is. I think that's the thing. And also the kids, don't split them up. Keep them, you know, if they want to be with their mates. Okay, if they're not quite that good, well, you know, try and fit them in somewhere. But that's what I'm seeing. You can't compare our era, but you can take some valuable lessons from it. And I think, a lot of countries are maybe, and including Australia, maybe are neglecting a little bit of their grassroots, from what I hear around the traps. I don't know, but it could be better.
Look, I think certainly at the top end, but the thing that gives me one of my greatest pleasures in life is at the club we were talking about before, at Stevens Reserve, the floodlights are on a Thursday night, the kids have finished the junior training, the adults are up, the kids maybe, they've had a feed in the club rooms, and then they run free. And it's safe. It's a friendly environment. And those are the things that I remember and cherish myself as a kid at my hockey club back in the UK. And it's and that's why I'm into the sport now. It's not about me being an elite player because that was never going to bloody happen. But it's about that bigger experience that the hockey family, it's maybe not uniquely, but within the hockey family we feel like it's unique, like, you know, like everybody does.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about, that's another good thing about Perth, I mean, my kids were able to go out and play hockey while, you know, after we'd had a game or a training and that. I mean, my son used to love coming to training because the weather was okay, but he could play with his mates there because there would be other kids there as well, and they have the lights. I mean, in New Zealand we didn't have the lights, we couldn't afford the lights, but it would be too wet and cold anyway. Well, not everywhere, but you know. So it's a great, that's another great environment in Perth particularly, I'm sure other parts of Australia as well, where that is a case. And I suppose with these different pitches now where you're training, you know, 10 o'clock at night on the Astro, or what do you call it, artificial, whatever it's called now. You don't have that. I mean, actually, some of those nights on Thursday nights at Stevens were really bad news.
Alan, we're going to have to wind this chat up sooner or later.
What
are you doing with yourself these days, and what engagement do you still have with the game?
Okay, well, I back in Perth 9 years ago, I was still playing midweek until I was banned for 2 weeks. That's the story. Yeah, I was still playing, and I was asked to use this program, a nutrition program. And, I'd used supplements and stuff over the years, but I'd never used a complete program. I said, okay, I'll try it. And only because it had a 30-day money-back guarantee. But what happened, it just changed my life, and all the guys saying, what are you doing, Chez? You know, you're doing my training and all this. How come? I was always pretty fit. But I just had way more energy and everything like this, and better recovery. But it was incredible. And anyway, so a few other guys, started taking it and so forth. But at the end of the day, it changed my life, how I was off the pitch as well, and my business and everything. So I ended up actually as a business. But then I met this lovely lady who over here with, she said, come to South Africa. And the company, I couldn't get any supply. So I said, oh, well, I'll just chuck it in. But I brought some over here with me, and they tried it as well here, and it was incredible. I was just going to let it go. But what happened, it started to build, because a lot of people were taking it and were connected to me around the world. And I thought, oh, this is a good way to do business. So then, in bottom line, I thought, well, I'll just contact a lot of people in sport, particularly in hockey and stuff. And I found there was a huge gap there with people not understanding how their body worked and their recovery and muscle and all this stuff. There's all these people who knew how to build muscle. Well, they thought they did. And they don't. There's so much ignorance. And so I'm now talking to people in hockey, like coaches, players, weekend warriors, kids, because there's so much problem with nutrition, with sugar and all this stuff everywhere in the world, to share this story. And then, of course, we've got a solution for them.
How do people find out about the solution and the story? You've got a web address, a Facebook page?
Just come to me. Just send me a message on Facebook. The problem is, I can send you to the website, but there's so much stuff there. And that's a bit like, how hockey, you can say, oh, I've got to send you to a hockey website and you've never played hockey before. It's better to go to someone and say, well, what do you want out of it? What are you doing now? And then I can direct you. And that's where another problem is. A lot of people, that's what they do. They just send them to websites and then everyone has their two bobs worth and they don't get the advice that they want or the result they want. But it's basically, the good thing now is they've come out with a whole sports program and it's all certified, for those who are on the weed. Weed for WADA. it's probably, not being, I just think it's better that way, because it's like your hockey stick, like when Hazel was started off with hockey sticks, everyone took the hockey stick to him and then they knew about what stick they wanted. It's exactly the same with this, and that's where why there's been a problem, because everyone's got their two bobs worth out there and it's not working.
That's it. Why buy a hockey stick online when you can get one in your hand?
Yeah, that's right. It's like shoes and all sorts of stuff. I mean, people are doing it, but the thing is, if you want a really good result, and I mean, there's a hell of a lot of people, friends of mine, including some of the New Zealand guys that I've played with, have had huge heart attacks, all sorts of issues just through ignorance. And there's a hell of a lot of people playing masters, there shouldn't be. Well, there's probably an average of one or two a year keel over, isn't it, at the masters?
Well, I'm hoping that John stays with me a little bit longer, Alan.
Not a statistic I wanted to hear, actually. but that's part of that ignorance, isn't it?
When I used to go to, the Australian Nationals, there's guys out there with big fat guts, and in the heat, trying and playing several games, and then they go and have a big fat sausage and a few beers, and they go to the physio. Oh, come on.
No, I'm hearing that.
But I'm not saying that should have, that they, if they knew that they could actually have an alternative, still have the sausage and the beers, then go to the physio if they want as a bonus. But, yeah. You know, there's a huge opportunity to actually enjoy your hockey more or your sport or just your life more that I've found out in 9 years. And that's the message I'm putting out there. I'm very passionate about it. And not everyone wants to know. It doesn't matter. And there's people gradually, and I'm doing it, and that's the crusade. That's
People can find you by logging into Facebook and typing Alan Chesney in the search bar.
C H E S N E Y.
Look out for the bloke in the blue singlet, and that's
Looking well, looking fit.
Yeah, you are, Alan. You look, for a bloke that won a gold medal in 1976, you're looking all right.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, that's the other thing is there's a lot of people putting stuff out there, and you say, well, what are you using?
And look, we're a testament. We started this conversation with you on video, and you look in fine fettle, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, and I feel terrific. Well, we're moving to Perth in the next 3 months. So I'll come and do a live one with you in your garage there.
That would be fantastic. You'd be most welcome.
In the shed, no doubt.
In Kublup, is it?
Yeah, he's on.
Don't tell everyone.
It's the Kublup Broadcasting Corporation.
That's it. Birdie told me about it.
The bird man, good on him.
He said, yeah.
Well, I've just played with him tonight. I gave him a call up at 5:30 and said, you fancy a game? And he came along and played. He arrived 20 minutes late, but, you know, fair enough. Alan, just before we let you go, we need to know about your thoughts on the bully. Are you behind our campaign, hashtag bring back the bully?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I was a kid, that was part of the start of the game, and these guys were unbelievable at the bully.
Yeah.
And this was a big thing, and of course then they had penalty bully, and the goalie had to do the penalty bully in the muck. So,
remind us of that rule.
The penalty bully.
Yeah, that was before strokes. They used to have the penalty bully.
Oh, mate.
And the goal, and it wasn't initially it wasn't against the person. The goalkeeper had to take it. And then they said, okay, it was the offending person. So then they had these bullies. And, but the, of course you can imagine the Indians and Pakistanis the way they used to cheat. I was one and a half, and also they bash your stick away. But, our centre forward, Barry Maisto, was probably one of the best centre forwards in the world just because he wasn't a big sprinter. He's actually had the best. But he's probably one of the most skillful players I've ever played hockey with. And because he wasn't flashy, but one-on-one he could beat anyone. If he had the ball and around the top of the circle or whatever, you'd always know he'd smash the ball in that. But the thing is, and he was a brilliant at bullying. The bully, and because he'd done it all his life, but it was a big thing, and I reckon you should bring it back because it was just part of the game.
It's an iconic part of the game.
Absolutely,
it's our USP. The marketeers, they love that.
What's that mean?
Bring it back. Bring it back, and I think the rolling. I think that should come back.
What about trapping the ball with your hand? Trapping the aerial ball with your hand.
The look away.
The look away, and then we used to do the bounce. You know, where you make sure you land it just in front of the opposition, so it took off like a cricket ball and went straight to the centre half.
All the tricks, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe Hockey Fives could introduce that with a throw in.
Yeah, well, now you're allowed to bash, you're allowed, you know, they've taken, that used to be dangerous play. Now they're playing like shinty with a ball in the air.
Yeah.
And geez, I tell you what, we would have loved that. imagine Brian Glencross. You ask him if that ball came to him in the air. You're out about your head.
Alan, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. We've had a great time. We wish you all the very best with your current project, and we hope to catch up with you very soon in the shed here in Coobee.
Good on you. Thanks a lot, John and Matt. I really appreciate it, and you're doing a great job there. And it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it too.